Remaker's Mark Episode 21, The Searchers. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Remaker's Mark. Here we have Episode 21, where we are discussing The Searchers. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks. Andy, how are you doing tonight?
I am very well, thank you.
Good, good. Happy to hear it. Jeremy Nilsson. Jer, how are you?
I am lovely.
Excellent. Happy to hear it. Lee Han Solo, how are you tonight?
Splendid.
Good, good. Happy to hear it. And Mark Josting, how are you and welcome back?
Thank you. And I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Happy to hear it.
Kyle, how are you tonight?
Oh, thank you. That's a very nice thing for you to ask. My name is Kyle Delahunt, and I'm doing very well as well. Thank you very much. Before we get started talking about The Searchers, I want to thank our friends at Modern Antics for their promotional consideration.
Modern Antics produces and markets hugely interesting events in bars and other cool places. New from Modern Antics, Riddle Room. Riddle Room is a live puzzle game unlike anything you've ever experienced. 12 people are locked in the bunker, and they have 1 hour to solve a series of increasingly difficult challenges before the clock runs out. Tickets are available for May events right now. Interested in other Modern Antics events? Check them out at modernantics.com or on Facebook and Twitter at Modern Antics.
All right. Thanks again to Modern Antics. Now we move on to our discussion of The Searchers. Andy, do you want to give us a brief summary and a little bit of our history with the film?
I would love to. The Searchers is a 1956 Western film directed by John Ford. It's set during the Texas and Indian Wars. The film stars John Wayne as Ethan Edwards, a Civil War veteran who, along with his adoptive nephew Marty, played by Jeffrey Hunter, spends years looking for his nieces who were abducted by a tribe of Comanche Indians. This movie was picked kind of by committee, mostly by me, but kind of by committee, because I wanted to get a Western into our reviewed canon. And this was the one that floated to the top as one of the kind of epitomes of the genre. So I don't think many of us had a history with it, save from Lee and Kyle. Did you have a history with it?
Yeah, I have been a fan and listener of the Film Spotting podcast for many years. I had a little break there where I didn't listen to it a lot, but I've since picked it up again. But it's a great podcast. It's distributed through, I think, WBEZ out of Chicago, and they have podcasted forever, and then they got picked up by public radio. It's a really great kind of broad film podcast where they do analysis, reviews, and one of the things they do is top five lists. And so they do marathons as well as part of that. And one of the marathons that they did was Westerns. And so years ago, maybe like 2005, 2006, you know, really early on in the kind of podcasting era, they did one about Westerns. And they discussed, amongst other films, Rio Bravo and The Searchers, which were two that we were kind of deciding between. And we ended up landing on The Searchers for our discussion here. So I had not seen it, but I had remembered it and knew of it because of the Film Spotting discussion. So I highly recommend that you check out the podcast and specifically go back to those. They were really good discussions and really kind of helped me understand the Western and then help me view it this go around.
Nice. I personally had no history with it at all until seeing it. So chalk this one up again to expanding my cinematic horizons. Lee, though, I know that you were a big fan of this one and were pushing it pretty hard, I think, in a good way. I don't mean to sound that you were pushing. Lee, you were fine. Stop.
Yes.
You're fine.
I put a gun to all your heads and said, we're doing this one.
No, I'm very glad you did. But tell, you have some history with it, don't you?
Yeah, this was one of those movies back in the late 90s when I was starting to watch a lot of movies and just sort of, I guess, expand my horizons a bit. I think I had seen this on Turner Classic Movies one night, and it was cited as one of the defining films of the genre. And it was particularly interesting because John Wayne plays kind of a borderline character. He's not squeaky clean cowboy, and he's not necessarily a bad guy, but he does a lot of very questionable things. So yeah, that made it an interesting viewing for me.
Indeed, yeah. Not quite anti-hero, hearkening back to our Taxi Driver discussion, but certainly not the cut and dry red, white, and blue American hero that I think he has played many times before and since then. So yeah, and we'll talk about that when we get into the discussion of the character as well. So as usual, in part one here, we will be talking about recasting the film. So we have three major characters and five minor characters that we are going to discuss. The first major character is that of Scar, or Chief Cicatrice, as he's known later in the movie, who is the head of the Comanche tribe who kidnaps two members of Ethan and Marty's family and is the imposing figure chased throughout nearly the entire movie. In the original movie, this was played by Henry Brandon. Now, if you listen to that name and hear it, it does not sound terribly Native American. It is not. He is a German. He just happened to have a darker complexion and sort of strong features that made him look vaguely Native American-ish or sort of vaguely Middle Eastern. So kind of in his career, he had various roles where he played essentially kind of non-American folk. So in this case, he ended up playing a Comanche Indian chief. So what I kind of put priority on was having a true Native American in this role. It was actually surprisingly hard to find Native American actors, which made me realize how infrequent they are portrayed on screen.
Yeah, I don't think it's that surprising.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's surprising, but I think it's too bad that that is the case. When I did some searches, I found a lot of results that were people in Dances with Wolves. I mean, that was a kind of the, I don't know if event movie is the right thing, but I mean, that was a big one for Native American actors and actresses that had a lot of people in it, but not as many people in modern films. And the person, as I kind of searched and looked, that I ended up on was Raul Trujillo. He's been in a fair amount of modern movies like The New World, Cowboys and Aliens, Apocalypto, and Riddick. And there'll be, again, a link to his IMDb profile in the show notes on mathishard.net, so you can kind of see what he looks like. But he just struck me as, I recognize him from both Riddick and Apocalypto, and he's got a very, very strong presence. Something that I think that the character of Scar is not seen a lot in the film. He is a couple times, but not too much. It's just more of this figure that sort of sits over the movie, and his influence and the mood of the movie is influenced by who he is. And I think he could, with his look, create that energy and create that mood over the film of this villain that you don't see a lot, but you feel in every aspect of their chase and trying to find him. So, I don't know a lot about his acting skills. I don't know a lot about him, but to me, he has that look and he has the mood that I think does a good job for Chief Cicatrice or Scar.
Agreed. He's striking.
Yeah, very much so.
When I was looking him up after you announced it, the first one that I came across was Robert Trujillo. It was very, very different.
Yes, the bass player from Metallica. Yeah.
Who would also be very imposing and fierce, I think, but in a different sort of way.
Yeah. True.
He could probably also play a Native American.
Yeah.
He probably could.
Yep, agreed. Andy, how about you? Who did you pick for Scar?
I had a similar dilemma as what you were describing, Kyle, in terms of trying to come up with a list in my head of Native American actors or actors who I know that had played Native Americans that were of the right age bracket where I thought they would fit the bill. And I just really didn't come up with anything that was what I was looking for. So I kind of went in a different direction. I will admit being guilty of a little bit of the finding an actor with dark features logic and casting them in this role. But I'm doing it in a way, I'm reimagining this movie a little bit, and it is not fully formed in my head, but at least the picks I like a lot. I picked Javier Bardem for this role.
Nice.
He is a very striking individual. And I think that there could be enough makeup and costuming in this role to make him sort of unrecognizable. And I think it would actually be interesting in this role to cast him and to have him speak in a Native American dialect in the language of the Comanches throughout it. So you wouldn't even really have to worry so much about him, the fact that he is a native Spanish speaker. But I think he has He's played the villain before, and he's played it very, very well. He's also played a very mysterious, and, you know, mysterious characters and things like this, and has a natural charisma about him. So I think he would be believable as a chief, as a leader of a tribe, and also as kind of a badass. So Javier Bardem for your consideration.
Yep. Few people do imposing presence quite as well as Javier Bardem. Yeah. Agreed. Nice. Yeah. We'll be talking in part two about kind of how we hope to better the original in terms of how Native Americans are portrayed, or, you know, what other opportunities are there in terms of maybe other races or other environs for that. So it doesn't necessarily have to be that he is a Native American chief. I mean, if we remade it in the same time, the same area, etc., then I still think he could do that. But I like that pick in terms of diversity at the same time.
I think it comes to, for me, this pick comes down to who this person is going to be, who Scar is going to be in the movie. Is he going to have a more substantial role than he did in the original, or is he going to be just that imposing presence that's sort of being chased through the whole movie, but we don't, it's not really a prototypical antagonist in that he's not really doing a lot besides what he did at the beginning of the movie that we didn't even really see.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't necessarily envision him as being a more visible present character. I kind of liked that he was more legend than reality. You know, that he was this evil force that was clearly doing evil things, but you didn't see him very much. And actually, when I did see him in the original, I was a little bit let down. You know, like, oh, that's him. Was expecting someone large. Yeah, I think you're expecting someone larger than life, which, you know, I suppose is the reality of, you know, being face to face with any quote unquote legend. But I kind of like him being a character with less screen time and more, you know, rumor time. More rumor time.
I like it.
Like Finn, yeah. Fleetwood Mac?
More rumor.
With an O and a U?
Yes.
I like
always
it.
Yes. All right. Lee, who did you pick for Chief Scarcatrees?
Scarcatrees. Well, I was thinking of, you know, someone with very distinguishing features, but not necessarily of Native American descent. You know, I thought a bit about the story and how it could be translated into maybe a different setting or different antagonist. You know, maybe it's not a Comanche Indian tribe. It's a group of bandidos, something like that. So I went with Benicio del Toro, who I believe we're all very familiar with.
Yeah.
So I don't feel a need to run down his resume here, but I think he can be very imposing without saying any words. He just has that kind of presence. For someone who, like what Andy said, is not on screen a lot, I think it would be even more effective to have someone like him in this role.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, I do too.
Nice.
Thank you. Jer, who do you got?
I was looking for somebody that is going to be more physically imposing than anything else, with potentially the ability to just be completely terrifying in what he is doing. And so I chose Jason Momoa, who we may know from the lead in the Conan the Barbarian remake. Khal Drogo from, I was going to say Lord of the Rings, from Game of Thrones of the Rings.
Lord of the Thrones. Game of Rings.
He's just a giant hulking beast of a man. He also is Hawaiian with a little bit of Native American as well, and he looks the part. And if you've seen him in either of those two movies, you know that he's just is completely fierce and kind of terrifying and looks like an MMA fighter.
Yeah, with really good eye makeup.
With really good, yeah. He knows how to guideline.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think that, to me, this character just needs to be, like you guys have said, somebody that's just sort of off in the distance, capable of really horrible things, but ultimately is being chased, is not hunting them down. They are hunting him down. And I would almost see even a little bit more of an expanded part for him to kind of give a little bit more backstory as to why they're doing what they're doing and why there's this conflict beyond just this blatant race component that there kind of was in the original, but really explain their actions a little bit more.
Yeah, that's a really good pick. I've watched season one of Game of Thrones, and then we're kind of playing catch up. Kate and I are watching it together, and then we'll start season two together going forward. And so, I've been seeing him a lot of late as we've been rewatching that, and he's great. And it's interesting. I mean, he is so strong and such an imposing presence, but then like you kind of see him have caring too, which, you know, it makes me happy that he's well-rounded. I don't think that the Scar character will necessarily tie into that. I mean, it's pretty kind of a one note in the original. Again, maybe with some changes, maybe it softens a little bit, or maybe you see some of those things or some of that kind of like Stockholm syndrome aspect of the niece that ends up in the tribe, you know, something like that, to kind of say or understand why she would feel that way, you know, things like that. So
well, I think that in a remake, you would have to make him a more human character. I don't think that you can make him just this one-dimensional bad guy, because those just don't exist too much anymore. There's got to be some kind of motivation for their actions, just as much as there is for Ethan's actions and the townspeople's actions and everything else. So whether those are, you know, good or bad or indifferent or, you know, noble or heinous, whatever it may be, at least we know why they're doing it, instead of just he's the bad guy up on the hill and kind of leaving it at that.
Yep.
So that's my pick. And that leaves us with Mark and his pick, which he will give us now.
Indeed I will. So I was very much going for the same sorts of things as Jer, and looking for someone to play this part that would be very physically imposing. And my approach was very different. Although I searched outside of the Native American actor pool, but I actually searched outside of the actor pool in general. and I picked Manny Pacquiao, who is the Filipino boxer.
I like it.
Yeah. With this pick, I think less acting would be a good thing, but I think that imposing is something that he can do for sure. And mm-hmm. as an example, let me provide you one of his nicknames, which would be Ang Pambang Sang Kamau. I think I'm pronouncing that right. The English translation is the nation's fist.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, so I think that's my argument for this casting pick.
Enough said.
I like it. That is a worthwhile argument for sure.
Thank you.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, who knows what he does performance-wise? You know, I mean, you never really know how an on-actor will perform in front of the camera. Sometimes it's, well, I shouldn't say that, because I think boxers perform even when they're not, you know, when they're not in the ring. There's so much machination and machismo around being a boxer. I mean, there's kind of that taunting, you know, I mean, so it's, I don't know how much he does of that, but I think the boxing world has quite a bit of that. Yeah. So I don't think he would be a...
He actually does some performance outside of that as well. Like he likes to sing, and has performed on stage a number of times.
Nice.
What boxer doesn't like to sing?
Indeed.
True. he's done some kind of clever commercials and stuff like that. So he's been in front of a camera before.
Yeah, but he's probably the biggest star in the Philippines.
Yeah, very cool. And is it Pacquiao or Pacquiao?
Pacquiao.
Pacquiao. Okay, got it. That will come in handy right now. So for the role of Scar, or Chief Cheekatrees, I went with Raul Trujillo. Andy went with Javier Bardem. Lee went with Benicio del Toro. Jer went with Jason Momoa. And Mark went with Manny Pacquiao. I think I still pronounced it wrong. That's okay.
Yes,
lot of actors with difficult names to pronounce.
It was, surprisingly so, yes. Or not surprisingly so. Up next in our major roles is that of Marty. Andy, tell us about Marty.
Marty is the brother or cousin or friend or something of the Edwards family. He accompanies Ethan on his quest to find Debbie over lo these many years. Along the way, he accidentally gets married. It's funny, until his wife dies. Then he fights another guy for a girl, not his first wife, but then never stays with her. Marty is bad at girls.
Amen.
He was originally played by Jeffrey Hunter, and I would say he's fine.
He had a great tan.
He was very tan.
Agreed.
I'll get into this later, but he reminded me a lot of one of the supporting characters in a previous episode we discussed in Bridge on the River Kwai. I think they went to the same acting school.
Would that be the madness
which
school
was,
of acting?
Madness. Madness. The school slogan was just louder, faster, more, more, more.
Yeah.
But anyway, the role of Marty is an important one. I think this role took on a larger, like, it was more important to the story than I originally expected it to be. I was kind of expecting it to be a throwaway kind of thing, but it really was crucial. It was, a little bit of a moral compass, it seemed sometimes for Ethan. Although that role also flipped a couple times. He was just very, you could tell he was very invested into this quest. He wasn't going to give up, even though he seemed kind of green, and young. He wanted to prove that he could do it. And he obviously cared about these girls, very much because they weren't clear. At least I didn't quite get it. His relationship to this family, it kind of made it sound like he was not a blood member of this family, but had been kind of a surrogate brother cousin.
I think like he was adopted.
Something like that. Yep. So he was very, very close to this family, is I guess my point. I chose for this one, I chose Paul Dano. I wanted a character. Thank you.
Interesting.
I wanted an actor who was young or seemed younger or more naive than my choice for Ethan or any choice for Ethan. And I wanted him to be very earnest and almost, not bumbling so, but like he's trying so hard that you just kind of want to tell him to just relax, just take a deep breath. And I could see Paul Dano doing that very well. And the stuff that I've seen him in, most recently, 12 Years a Slave, Little Miss Sunshine, to name a couple, he's been in several films, and he's done a wonderful job. But he's always has that, there's almost a straining quality to his acting that I think is beneficial to the roles, where he's really trying so hard to get some kind of point across, like his character's trying so hard to communicate something. So that was an important part that I wanted for this one. So, Paul Dano.
I wasn't quite sold on it until you reminded me about Little Miss Sunshine.
Yeah.
Like, he's a fantastic actor, but I have to wonder, is it too intense?
Yeah. I was thinking that exact same thing in terms of kind of like the darkness underneath or behind his eyes of sorts. In Paul Dano.
Yeah, Paul Dano.
And I think that it could make the character more interesting, but it's not quite a one note performance. It's maybe like a 1 3/4 note performance originally. And I think he could bring more to it, but I think, like you said, that moral compass of sorts, I think that there would be some ambiguity there that I don't know would necessarily strengthen that moral compass aspect of the Marty character with Paul Dano in the role. But I think he would do a very good job with the performance. It's just hard to see it in the role versus the original portrayal of the role. In the role, I think it's okay. Versus the original portrayal, I think it's a little too ambiguous in that regard.
Well, allow me to retort. I hear what you're saying. I think the original portrayal of this role was straight out of the 1950s, like Leave It to Beaver kind of, not dorky in that sense, but just, so earnest and good, and true and things like that. And I don't think that Paul Dano, if you saw him on screen, you'd be like, ooh, he's evil. I think that he would maybe provide a more realistic portrayal of this character, that he could be very, very earnest and wanting to do right by this family, which really sounds like his only family. But I think as the movie progresses and the plot progresses and he goes through things, like he sees death, he goes through these weird situations where he accidentally gets married, but then his wife does die. He sees a lot of really dark things. And I think then the character and maybe this kind of darkness that you're naturally talking about with Dano would be a boon instead of a bane.
Hmm.
A bing?
A boo-ane. So there you go.
Got it. I like it. That's a good description. I appreciate that.
Mark. To you.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Well, I made a better pick.
Wow.
No. Straight up.
Paul Dano's a fantastic actor once again, but I like Emil Hirsch for this role.
Ooh,
I think he brings those same chops and depth, but just has shown more of a light side. And I think he's displayed more versatility. Even though we know that Paul Dano is very versatile, but I've just seen a lot more of the breadth of a resume from Emil Hirsch. He's done just so many excellent roles, and Speed Racer.
I like Speed Racer.
I see what he did there.
That was nice. That was clever.
Thank you. Thank you. But yeah, so that is my pick.
That's good. Yeah, I think, you know, some of that ambiguity is there, but it doesn't have quite the uncertain malice behind it that Paul Dano would have. And Andy, you described it very well, but it's just in his face. It's just what his face does. His face does that thing, whereas Emil Hirsch's face...
I think he's just a mirror, and you just see your reflection in it.
It's true. It's very true. I'm a very dark individual, and I see myself in Paul Dano, especially when he beats the bejesus out of someone, and, or gets the bejesus beaten out of him, and there will be blood. Mm. Spoiler. Sorry. Yeah, that's a good pick, Mark. I like that.
Thank you. Let's move on to Jer.
My pick is equally as good as both of yours put together. Take that however you'd like to take it. To me, when I watched this movie again, I saw... Well, I'll get into the nuts and bolts of that later, but the Marty character, to me, especially in a remake, is going to become the every man, the observer character that we are... That's the character that we are going to connect with. And watching sort of this battle between Ethan and Scar, and watching Ethan's mad devotion to either revenge or getting his getting the girls back or whatever it might be, but he's just kind of there as an observer, helping, assisting, accidentally getting married, whatever he might best suit the situation. So with that being said, I chose Casey Affleck because I think that he can he can both play a fairly hardened cowboy from his assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford role, which was excellent. But he's also got a little bit of a lighter side to him. He can kind of be a little bit goofy without not making it feel forced. So, but I wanted for the main thing I wanted with this role is I wanted somebody that we could relate to, that we could connect with in this story, because I think ultimately his role in my mind is going to be our role in the story. And that is to kind of watch this play out between Ethan and his almost insanity towards trying to get these girls back.
I almost picked Casey Affleck as well, but he seems a little bit old to me for this role.
Well, he's baby-faced enough that I think that he could come off as kind of a, cowboy in training or whatever.
He can look, 5 to 10 years younger than he is, I think.
He's got some cowpoke.
I would have agreed with you. I would have agreed with you circa Ocean's 11, but I'm going to go with Mark on this one.
Yeah, I think even if he looks 10 years younger than he is, that still makes him like 30. And
I still think that works with kind of how the role shakes down, though.
To me, that's what he looked like in the original. I didn't feel like he was a little kid.
The movie does span 10 years.
True.
Yeah, that's a
good
true.
Point. So, good point.
Yep. Yep.
So I would see Casey Affleck then as Marty in the last scene of the movie.
The Elder Marty?
Elder Marty.
Elder Bad Fightin' Marty.
That's the one.
Exactly. Thank you. You all proved my point, so I win.
Yes.
Lee, you're next.
Okay. Well, what struck me most about the character of Marty is how bumbling and naive he was, despite his handsomeness, I guess. I mean, like Andy said, Marty is bad at girls, and that's very, very true. And I also think that's kind of an interesting character dynamic. With that, I went with Armie Hammer, just because I think he would nice. Have that. He would bring that, the requisite handsomeness. But it would be very interesting to see him play sort of a clumsy, overzealous, naive kid like this, and then see his story arc, see him, mature and grow a little bit wiser over the course of 10 years and having to spend it with a character like Ethan's.
Yeah, I think that's most akin to how it was played in the original movie in a good way. I say that very complimentarily. It just depends what the role ends up having done with it kind of in the remake. I think if it moves away from some of that bumbling aspects or some of that kind of naivety, I think that's a little bit less of a good fit. But I love the choice for kind of lining it up with how the original one was. You know, there's lots of different directions you can go with this movie. I think in the original, there was so much strange lightness amongst such a dark tale. And we'll talk about that in part two about how sort of strange that felt. But I think he could do some lightness to lighten the mood a little bit without having it quite go into the realm that the original did when just such weird stuff happened and such strange lightness was there. So yeah, I think he could do both of those things very well. And I think he's very pretty. So he's got that going for him.
And in stark contrast to the character of Ethan, which is, I think, important as well,
mm-hmm.
just visually. So, Kyle, you're up next.
Yeah, I sort of went along the lines that you did, Lee, in terms of trying to just find a better version of the original Marty. And in doing so, I wanted somebody that had kind of like heroism, but vulnerability. And the person that I ended up with is Chris Evans, who you would know now as Captain America, I guess is probably the most well-known thing. He was the Human Torch as well, but he's been several things other than that. But I would want him to not be quite so ripped, so he can take a few months off of working out, I guess. But I just think that going back to that moral compass, I don't know if any of you guys have seen the second Captain America. It's there in the first Captain America and the Avengers as well, but that moral compass is there so much in that second film where there's so much badness going on around him, and you can see his battle with wanting to be, you know, Captain America and understanding what that means to him and what he wants that to be. I think that can translate into this role, and it's not quite so cut and dry, yay America in this, you know what I mean? It's a little bit different, but I think that he is very handsome. I think he can play, you know, youngish. I think that he could look younger. Some of the digital makeup, that stuff that they did with Captain America made him look super young. So, I mean, if they wanted to go that route, they could just borrow those CG files for a while. But I think he would do a really good job of honoring kind of what the role originally was, and I think what it could be at its best form.
I like that one a lot. It's,
thanks.
Yeah, that's right in line with, I think, how the original character was cast. So yeah, I like that.
I'll take a little umbrage with that.
Yeah,
but I think he
go for
it. I think he just fits, and I think it's a product of his recent work that people will see him as a superhero versus this kind of perceived to be weaker secondary character. I just think it would be, I'm not saying he can't do it, I just think it would be tough for him to play that inferior character, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I do.
I think it would be very...
That's a very fair umbrage.
It would be largely dependent on who plays Ethan. I mean, that's. I guess you're setting a bar pretty high with your secondary character, so your primary character's got to be real good.
Higher. Oh, he will be. Don't you worry.
more gooder.
More gooder, indeed. All right, so in the role of Marty, originally played by Jeffrey Hunter, Andy went with Paul Dano, Mark went with Emile Hirsch, Jer went with Casey Affleck, Lee went with Armie Hammer, and I went with Chris Evans. Finally, the role of Ethan. Lee, tell us about Ethan.
Ethan is a complicated man. His loyalty toward his family is steadfast and true, but is unfortunately matched by his hatred of the Comanche Indian tribe. Both are demonstrated many times in his quest to rescue Debbie. Here we are again, recasting a legendary actor. Very big shoes to fill.
And whose shoes are those?
That would be John Wayne.
That is correct. That was not a quiz. I was just filling in the listeners just in case they didn't know.
Or Marian Morrison for trivia buffs.
There you go.
But, you know, I wanted an equally imposing figure, and, you know, thinking of my Armie Hammer pick, I wanted someone who had a very stark, contrasting look to him, yet can play the rugged cowboy very well. So I went with Daniel Craig, and I know that he can do a flawless American accent, as he demonstrated in Road to Perdition, In fact, that was the first thing I saw him in, and I didn't realize he was British. But yeah, I think the qualities that we're looking for in Ethan is something that Daniel Craig has demonstrated a few times in his career already. So I think he's a perfect fit.
That's a good pick.
I certainly considered him. And I was talking to Kyle earlier, there's a lot of actors that I opted not to pick simply because I'd already seen them do roles in Westerns and I didn't want to just repeat that. But man, he's a good pick.
Thank you.
Yeah. I can't find fault with him, but it feels like just off to me. And I can't say exactly why. It's nothing to do with him in particular. It just seems, he just seems strange in that role. And maybe I'm just putting too much of Bond on him. You know what I mean? I think he's played a lot of different roles. And again, yes, he has done American English accents very well, but it just, something just is a little unsettling for me. And I can't quite put my finger on it just yet, but I think he's awesome. I enjoy him very much as an actor.
Cool. And I pass the baton to Jer.
I will take this baton with my hand and I will hold right it on. Firmly.
Very literal.
My role for Ethan comes out of the idea that The Searchers is a retelling of Moby Dick.
Ooh.
I'll expound on that in episode 2. Check back. But Ethan is Ahab. He is obsessed, and he is chasing down his great white whale, who this time happens to be a Native American named Scar. The lines blur whether he is chasing it for revenge, whether he is chasing it out of hatred, whether he's chasing it to save the girls. It kind of seems from the original that the girls are kind of an afterthought in many, many times during the whole process. And it becomes much more about him exacting some kind of revenge or just needing to do this, not to save them, but because he needs to do it for himself. I think he does find some redemption at the end when he doesn't, when he actually brings the girl home and doesn't shoot her, which is, you know, good.
Big of him.
So I wanted to find somebody that was going to play a good stalwart cowboy, but also can kind of bring a little bit more of that obsession and that completely altering drive to accomplish this thing into the portrayal. So I chose Christian Bale.
That'll do.
I would hearken back to his role in The Machinist and even the Dark Knight movies too. I mean, he's just got, you can see that he's played a lot of roles, and he is one of those method actors that just goes completely all out for a role. But you can see that he's got sort of that flame behind the eyes passion when he needs to, when the character needs it. So Christian Bale, everyone, Christian Bale.
And he was, again, top three for this one for me.
Yeah. The only thing that I think some of my discomfort with some of these picks is that no one can be John Wayne. I mean, we kind of threw that out there and we'll talk about some feedback given about that. But no one can be who he was. And so I have to completely separate him from that role. And it's so, so hard to do because he's such a imposing presence in that role. So I think he could do really well, but man, I'm having the hardest time thinking of him compared to John Wayne, and it doesn't stack up. But
don't think about him as compared to John Wayne. Think about him as a Civil War veteran who's coming back home with a bunch of baggage, who hates the Comanches and feels the need to go hunting for the one that burned his family's house down.
Why would we think of him like that?
Yeah, all right, I could see that.
That character happened to be played by John Wayne at one point, but now he's going to be played by somebody else.
Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, it's the same thing with Jeff Bridges in the other John Wayne remake that slips my mind.
True Grit.
I mean, I think in his... Grits. In that circumstance, I felt like he was trying to be too close to John Wayne, and the Coen brothers made it work. I love that movie, but I felt like that they were trying to find somebody John Wayne-ish and not and tried to stray a little too close to it. And there I would think that you would find a problem with close but no cigar is worse than trying to find somebody who's going to encapsulate some of the same emotions and feelings of the character, but not try to be the character.
Yeah, that's a good description. That's a great way to put it. I buy that.
Yep. Recast the character, not the actor.
Yep. I've never had such a hard time in doing that than I have with this role. I feel like I've been able to do that for every role thus far in our 20 previous episodes, and this one is just the hardest to do that.
I can't wait to see who you picked, but luckily I don't have to, because you're up.
All right. So yeah, I wanted somebody that was kind of, you know, grizzled and old and just, you know, sort of worse for the wear, but very strong at the same time. You know, Jeff Bridges was an interesting thought. I thought about that. I wanted somebody about maybe that old, but maybe not quite that old. So I was thinking of, you know, kind of grizzled, older-ish actors that had an imposing presence, but still felt like they could survive the journey that they go on. And I landed on Kurt Russell. You know, wow. He's had a storied career from The Thing to Escape from New York, Escape from LA, Bird on a Wire, who knows? I mean, he's been in many, many, many things. I just think that the character, I would like to replace some of his anger with a little bit of wiliness. And I think that he would do that very well. You know, I mean, I think the thing that I hone in on, which is a little bit separate, but the scene, the famous scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark, where Indiana Jones is faced with the guy spinning the sword, and instead of getting in this ornate battle, he just shoots the guy. I want Kurt Russell to be that guy in this movie. I want him to make those choices that the characters around him are doing things that he knows are not wise, and he lets them make those mistakes, but then he helps right them. So I think he can still have some of that rage. I think he can still have some of that anger, but I want him to be a little bit more wily and a little bit slipperier than John Wayne. And I think that could also add to the ambiguity of, is this guy a good guy or a bad guy too? I mean, I think so much of that came in his beliefs in the original. I'd like to see it be a little bit more of maybe his actions or the uncertainty of his beliefs in the remake. So Kurt Russell is who I went with.
I would look at his role in Stargate maybe as a reference point for that one.
Oh yeah. Good call.
Yeah, I could get on board with that.
Although he is now 62 years old.
Yeah.
What is he doing lately? Has he been in anything in the last 5 years?
Apparently he's going to be in the next Fast and the Furious, which should be interesting.
Because they're making another one.
Yeah. Seven. This is the seventh. No, he really hasn't been doing much, but I think this is a chance for him to kind of leap back into the fray a little bit. I would say Death Proof is not a great alignment with this film, but I thought his performance in that was really, really excellent. And that was, I guess, 7 years ago now, but I think, you know, it still shows that he's got it.
If anything would show that he's got it, it'd be Death Proof.
Yeah, true, true.
I think that he, just by his age alone, I could see this character looking more like the John Wayne from True Grit, but based on age, but not saying it can't happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's always looked younger than his age shows. I think he looks younger than that. So I think it could work that way. I agree that it is definitely skewing older, but I think it's okay that the character does that. I think someone of that age could survive that trek. I think that's the biggest determinant, is could they survive being out in the world for that long? And I think that his skills would show that absolutely could be, and his health.
Are you just saying that you're worried that your actor choice is too old, that he might die?
Yeah, essentially. No, I'm proving to you that he won't die. But yes, I think that's a worthwhile concern. Not the actor, I mean the character. I don't think the actor would die.
Although, that contract's got a big insurance clause on it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yepers. All right, Mark, on to you. Who did you pick for Ethan?
Well, I was going for not necessarily as grizzled as your pick, Kyle. I was focusing more on the enigmatic. And with that in mind, I picked Josh Brolin.
Nice.
That's a good one.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I wasn't necessarily going for a lot older than the rest of them, but you know, my pick for Marty was fairly young, so I think that it's the familiar relationship sort of works still. But yeah, Josh Brolin is he's shown a lot of depth in his weird characters. and a lot of normal characters that he's done as well. But he always makes them interesting, even when he has a more minor part, like in True Grit, the recent remake, where he does a, I don't know, very strange sort of cowboy role. But enigmatic is one thing that he does do in addition to tough, and yes, grizzled as well.
Yeah, I like it. And I think the mystery of the character too, I think, is good. So I love the idea of the enigmatic aspect of it. I think that's a great way to summarize his sort of presence. I think sometimes that can be a little bit too much, but I think for this role it would be really, really effective that way.
So do I.
Oh, funny that.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think he had that same kind of swagger in his character in No Country for Old Men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
So I immediately thought of that role when he mentioned his name, that and the Goonies. So. Which I will always have to reference whenever you bring him up, yeah, because we'll never be able to talk about that movie.
It's true. Yeah, we'll just live vicariously throughout external discussion of it.
And of course, yep, that movie is about a big search as well, isn't it?
It is.
Making him a natural pick for this role.
Yep.
You could almost rename Goonies The Searchers.
Could. Interesting.
You could, but we won't.
One-Eyed Scar?
No, because it was already you know, named. But
yeah.
Right. And we still won't.
Indeed. Right. I like sticking to your guns, Mark. Good work.
So that's my pick, Josh Brolin. Andy, you're up.
For my pick for Ethan, I went in a very different direction. I chose, and I'm going to mispronounce this, but I'm going to give it a shot. Chiwetel Ejiofor.
I think it's Chiwetel, but otherwise I Ejiofor. Think that's right on.
Most recently known for 12 Years a Slave. I wanted an actor who I felt could display a lot of world weariness, who had a sense of seen a lot of really bad things and was able to keep things bottled up inside and just kind of shove it deep down and move on, and then kind of feed off of that inner rage in a very quiet, tired kind of way, which I think describes a lot of his character in 12 Years a Slave. And also I think it'd be interesting to pair him and Paul Dano together.
Yeah, totally.
Having seen that movie. But anyway, so it would obviously require a pretty major reworking of the story. You know, he probably wasn't a Confederate veteran. so who knows? I mean, I'll leave that up for the writers. I'm just going to sell the idea to Hollywood and then go buy a chateau in the Swiss Alps and worry about the results later. But
a timeshare with Joe Hollywood.
That's the one. But I really think he is a fantastic actor, and I think would be a tired counterpoint to the frenetic pace of Marty, regardless of who would play that. Like he wouldn't engage in a, it's like I picture a young puppy running around an old dog, and you know, and this, and then Chiwetel or Mr. Ejiofor would he would kind of tolerate it for a while, but then would just do something quick and effective to put him in his place, something like that. That's how I picture this role going. So I didn't want to try to pick John Wayne Jr. or something like that. I wanted, like we said, recast the character, not the actor.
So I think you've done so very, very well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
He plays probably my favorite bad guy ever in Serenity.
Yeah.
And does all the things that you just talked about, Andy, and that makes it.
Which one is he in Serenity?
He's the bad guy.
The bad guy.
He's the guy who's coming to kill the good guys.
I always mix up the show and the movie titles.
Yeah. The scene where he gets the guy to fall on the sword is extraordinary. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, just keep talking him up. It's great.
Yeah, his not to sound shallow, but his blackness will be interesting. I think that will certainly have to be addressed. And you said as much, but I don't quite know how that would work. Yep. I like that.
I actually kind of thought it's interesting that you brought up Serenity, because I honestly didn't even realize that he was in that, because I was kind of picturing the Serenity Firefly universe as a kind of a like, could this be kind of a space western kind of just completely start from scratch and try something different with the storyline. So
a space western, that'll never last more than a season.
You're probably right.
We all saw how well that went with Cowboys versus Aliens, though. So, which actually, now that I think about it, is very Searchers-esque, only terrible.
Wasn't that bad.
Oh, my God. Yes, it was.
Well.
It was bad. Capital B, capital A, small d, bad.
Olivia Wilde was pretty.
Yeah, all right, fair enough.
All right, so.
All right.
Anyway, moving on.
So, in the role of Ethan, originally played by John Wayne, Lee went with Daniel Craig, Jer went with Christian Bale, I went with Kurt Russell, Mark went with Josh Brolin, and Andy went with Chiwetel Ejiofor. Now we move on to our minor characters, and up first is Charlie McCrory. Charlie McCrory is the angel-voiced country bumpkin who comes into Lori's life at just the right time, after she finds out her crush Marty accidentally married a Native American woman. He might not be the sharpest tool in the shed, but at least he's a terrible fighter. This role was really, really odd. In terms of things that we'll discuss in part two and things we've sort of foreshadowed a little bit here as far as the moments of brevity and moments of levity and moments of lightness in the original movie, this was easily the weirdest one to me. He's just this kind of yokel who sings very well and sort of fake plays guitar very well, but just a total idiot. I think the role of Lori, who we'll get to in a little bit here in terms of casting, is a very strong female role, and I love how she was portrayed. I love how she was written. I think it was really interesting, and for her to end up with him felt really wrong to me. Not like terrible wrong, but just not worthy of her as a character and an individual. So I wanted somebody that could kind of maintain that musicality. And I know that wasn't a huge part of his role, but I actually kind of like that. I like that when he was singing, I thought that was really interesting and really neat. And I like that was something different about him, you know, versus kind of grizzled Marty or sort of naive, you know, tan Marty. Here's this musician coming in and being, you know, sort of sweeping her off her feet with song. So I went with somebody who I don't believe has acted before, but who I thought would be a good fit for the role, which is M. Ward. He is a fabulous musician. He's done his own solo work. He is in She and Him with Andy's favorite Zooey Deschanel. Mm-hmm. I don't like them, but I really like him. He is really, really great. And he's got kind of a look that I think would fit in there. So if you do a Google image search for him, you'll sort of see. But I can see him being sort of that troubadour type that could sweep somebody like Lori off of her feet. And I think in terms of not having a lot of acting training, if we keep him bumpkin light, maybe a little bit bumpkin-ish, I don't know. I think that would actually be okay. Bumpkin-esque, yeah. So I think that, you know, that could be a strength in that regard. So it's not somebody that's super polished, but he's a nice guy. He's a good guy, a terrible fighter, but a nice guy. And I think M. Ward could do that really well.
It's a good pick.
Thanks. It makes me want to listen to some M. Ward. It's good stuff. Up next is Debbie. Jared, tell us about Debbie.
Debbie is the niece of Ethan, and at the start of our story, she is just a child until she gets kidnapped by Scar. And after a long, and I mean long, search for her, Ethan finally finds her, and when she is found, she's gone full Patty Hearst and married Scar, and ultimately decides to stay with him and the Comanche, and then they have to go back and get her again, and on and on. So I also, like Kyle, chose a non-actor for this role, and I went with Ella Maria Lanny Yellick O'Connor. Most of the world knows her as Lord.
Interesting.
I like it.
Yeah. She's from New Zealand, and if you look at her, she is what I would imagine the Debbie character to be. Kind of at the beginning or through most of the movie, kind of that Lolita character, but then at the end, when she's feels like she's found herself and can fight through that. And I would just love to see Lord act, because I think she's a pretty classy gal, and I think she's got a lot of talent, and that could span other arenas besides just singing.
Yeah.
Agreed.
My only concern with her is that she's got, and I've never said this in public before, so please don't shame me for it. She's got a little bit of a case of the Voldemort hands. I don't know if you've ever seen her sing. They're very, very Voldemort-y. And so I think we'd have to work with her to sort of cure her of the Voldemort hands. But otherwise, I think it's a great pick. I think that's just
right on. Don't give her a wand.
She could do really well. Don't give her a microphone. Don't give her anything vaguely wand or microphone shaped.
The first scene, when we find her married to Scar, she's holding a stick with a bunch of pelts on it. Isn't that where we find her in the movie?
That's right.
It's true. That's true. Yeah. So, no, I really think she would do well. I like that pick. I like kind of going outside that. And Natalie Wood in the original was an interesting choice for that. I think it was... I don't know. I think she just, I don't know how she ended up in it. It felt a little bit strange, but it worked. I thought she was fine.
Well, and what I found interesting in it is that her younger sister played her, that played Debbie the younger, and then she played Debbie the older, which is cool.
Agreed. So we just need to find Lord's sister.
Lord does have a sister. I believe her name is Angel or something along those lines.
There's a modest family.
Oh, they do it different in New Zealand.
It's true.
I'm very much looking forward to this next pick for Andy.
And I hope I don't disappoint. I am going to be talking about Mose. Mose is either a brilliant supporting character or a horrible stereotype of someone with disabilities. I really cannot decide. He's originally played by Hank Warden. At first, I wasn't really sure what point Mose played. What was his reason for existing in this movie? And I'm really still not sure. He is not depicted as a very intelligent man, or at least one who's all there in his right mind, so to speak. But he's also well-loved by a lot of the characters in the movie, kind of tolerated, but then kind of well-loved deep down underneath. And for this role, I chose Paul Rubens.
It's either inspired or it's going to be completely like record scratch off the rails.
I'd like to think it's a little of both.
It's somewhere in between. I like that. Can he do, like, I've never heard him interviewed and not doing the Pee-wee voice. Can he?
Oh, yeah. He totally sound, can. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he can do.
Watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Watch Mystery Men, where he does a horrible.
Yeah, he still had that Mystery Men, though.
He was on a couple early, or maybe one early episode of 30 Rock.
Oh, okay.
Which was absurdly funny. He played a prince or a duke or something.
Oh, yeah. But he's still kind of Pee-wee-ish.
Because of all the... Though. I didn't even recognize him at first.
Well, here's one thing I'm kind of thinking of this role.
He can speak with normal voice.
Is that he could even do a little bit of the Pee-wee voice, but almost take it so far to an extreme to just make it sound so bizarre and weird. Because really, this character, his dialect and everything, it's just... He speaks in nonsense, like in near nonsense, where he kind of has a point across. He can understand what you're saying, but he doesn't answer in clear sentences. And he kind of has this sing-song kind of pattern and cadence to his voice. So he already sounds very, very strange. So I think that it wouldn't be, you know, out of the realm of possibility to tell Paul Rubens to be like, dude, just make up the weirdest voice you can think and we'll run with it. And I think that he probably would.
He's the Old West's Ralph Wiggum.
That's good. I really liked, I mean, I didn't like the sort of insensitivity with which the original character was written, but I liked how he was portrayed. I think the actor did a good job with it. I thought it was like kind of vulnerable and sweet at the same time. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how that would work out, but I like it. I think it's a good call.
So on to Mark to tell us about the Right Reverend Captain.
Sure. Sometimes a preacher and sometimes an officer, the Reverend Captain Samuel Johnston Clayton is always awesome. He leads search parties and officiates weddings. He's a military officer and a mannered guest. He's an all-around leader and deserves the respect that his mustache commands. he's originally played by Ward Bond, and again, awesomely. I think that this role is great. It kind of straddles that line between comedy and I don't know if I would necessarily want to say action, but yeah, because I don't want to say that because it would make it sound like a buddy film, but no. but he really does walk a line in this movie with this performance, and I wanted to, I wouldn't change a thing. I want exactly the same sort of feel. And so I picked Judd Nelson.
Yes.
I want him to be able to have a little bit of levity, but still authority as well. And and have a great mustache.
Yes.
I like it. I like your priorities there. That's good.
I think the only other person who could have played this is Tom Selleck.
Nice.
In terms of mustache. Agreed. I'm just talking mustache.
In terms of mustache. Yeah.
Yep. Or Sam Elliott, but
Sam Elliott. I was going to say.
I thought about Sam Elliott, but maybe a little bit too intense.
Yeah, I thought of Sam Elliott for Ethan too, but it just felt I would have felt like
he's old.
I was watching. Yeah, I would have been watching the Big Lebowski character.
Yeah,
it's not a bad thing. It's just not the right thing.
Why you got to say so many curse words?
The F you're talking about.
Yep.
Yep.
Lee, let's move on to you.
Well, Lori, originally played by Vera Miles, who incidentally played Janet Leigh's sister in Psycho. Lori is our atypical would-be matriarch. She's very much a den mother and knows what she wants. The only thing missing from her life is a husband. As a result, she spends most of the story chasing Marty. For this role, I wanted someone who, you know, looked to be maybe in her mid-20s, very assertive, very pretty. So I went with Alicia Cuthbert, who I first saw in Old School, but she had a really great role in The Girl Next Door, kind of the leading role in that.
Yeah, she was great.
She was also in 24, a few episodes of that, the short-lived sitcom Happy Endings.
And she was really funny in that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She was hilarious. And it's not a great barometer for this role, but... I think it shows that she has range and she can be funny at the same time. So, I really liked her for this.
Yeah. I haven't seen much from her. I guess she was in 21 or sorry, 21. Apparently it's 21 hours in a day in 24. Excuse me. Sorry. Yeah, I like that. I like that. I'm surprised you didn't go. I could see this being a Gillian Jacobs vehicle in a big way. Like I could see that.
I considered her briefly, but, maybe a little too comedic for this one.
Okay, fair enough.
So, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, good pick. I dig it.
Thanks.
All right, so that wraps up our minor characters, and with that, the first part of our discussion of The Searchers. Tune in next time on June 2nd, where we'll be discussing the second half of The Searchers and talking about the plot and filmmaking changes that we would make to the movie as well. If you want to find out more information about this podcast or any other podcast or blog on the Math is Hard Network, check us out at mathishard.net. You can also find show notes there where you can look up information about the actors and actresses and movies discussed here in part one and in part two when that comes out as well. You can also find us on social media on both Twitter and Facebook at username mathishardnet, all one word. So gents, as always, thanks for your time. This is a good time, and pilgrims, until the next time, may the force be with you.
And also with you.